And we're back. We're back. A little technical difficulty there. We had a streaker. He came in. There was an Android device. There was a bit of a wrestling match. It was a large Android device. We hit him in the head and knocked him out. We're fine now, though, so don't worry. Are you feeling okay? I was a little concerned.
No, you had me covered, so I was pretty safe.
I protected Pranav. We're here with Pranav, and I'm kind of snugged up next to him here because I want to take a look at his machine. What we're going to do in this session is we're going to talk about upgrading applications, okay? There's a lot of people out there using MVC3, MVC4, older versions of ASP.NET, and it's not really intuitive how to upgrade those.
Exactly.
And there isn't just a wizard. Why can't I just open an old file and have it magically convert to the latest stuff?
Because it's complicated.
It's complicated. So what we've got is a series of older applications that we're going to try to upgrade.
Right.
We'll do various versions, we'll go through the process, and we'll talk about what you need to be thinking about when you are upgrading your stuff. So let's jump in.
Perfect. So as Scott mentioned, like the things that we really care about while upgrading is, you know, as we have different MVC versions or different VS versions, how do you sort of open these applications up in Visual Studio? And then how do you sort of go about, or what should you be thinking about while upgrading these applications? Because I think the critical part, what comes down to is, there are a lot of these applications which have different kinds of assets, like you have NuGet packages, and then how do you handle these assets or how do you move these forward? So it becomes a bit interesting in my opinion. And so the first thing that you're going to see basically is I have an existing MVC3 application which I created in Visual Studio 2012. And then I just installed the latest and greatest Visual Studio 2013. So how do I open this application up? What do I have to do to sort of get this app running and stuff? And the scenario that I'm going to try to highlight is there's a feature called round tripping in Visual Studio. So starting from Visual Studio 2012, there was a whole theme around maintaining backwards compatibility. So you created a project in one version of VS, you should be able to open it up in another version of VS. So if you have a multi-team kind of a scenario, then you know different people can sort of work on that project itself.
Because what would happen is you would open a solution,
right?
You would convert it in a one-way trip.
And then you can't go back. Yep. And then you're like, okay. And that's, I think, forces a lot of people not to upgrade because they're different people having different versions of VS.
Right.
So let me show you this particular application.
So we are in 2013 or 2012?
So
see our help about so we can understand what's going on. So this is 2012.
Yeah.
And this is an MVC3 application.
This is an MVC3 application.
Alrighty.
And so we can look at in packages config. You know, I have MVC.
Okay.
Version 3.0.
Packages config is a really great place for people to spend time. I mean, they really don't go in there enough.
Exactly. Because starting from MVC3 onwards, like a lot of our features ship as NuGet packages. So MVC, Web API, SignalR, EF, like all of these ship as NuGet packages in your projects. So I'm going to just run this application just to show you how ancient this app looks.
Well, don't be mean. It's last year's tech. I think the point is, though, that what, you know, how many versions back do we support, right? You can't take an MVC 1 or 2
Correct.
App and open them in 2013.
Yes. So what we're trying to strive for is, like, we're trying to strive for, like, N and N minus 2 in the current versions of VS. So, for example, in Visual Studio 2013, you can create MVC 5 and MVC 4, and you can open MVC 3 applications and use Visual Studio 13 to sort of
I see.
Edit them.
So we support the current and one back, and then the ability to open and do some base development.
Exactly.
Two back. Okay.
Exactly. So this is my MVC 3 application. I'm just going to open it up in File Explorer so I can get the path to the project.
Okay, so this is MVC app
30
in your 2012 folder.
So I'm going to close this solution, and I'm going to go to 2013. I can up about check.
So this is 2013 update 1.
Correct. And then I'm going to open this project.
So then you've pasted in the path to your MVC
30
solution. Your 3.0 solution.
I'm going to open that solution up.
Now is it going to pop a dialog or warn me or anything like that? It looks like it's just opening.
So it's opening it for the first time. So it's doing some processing when it's trying to figure out the project compatibility, and it gives me a log of what happened.
So what do we have here? Anything bad? No errors?
No errors. There's just warnings. Basically, Visual Studio had to make some non-functional changes, which means it modified some of the project and solution entries so that this project can open in 2013.
Ah, so this is enabling round-tripping.
This is enabling round-tripping.
But it says non-functional, implying that it's not going to prevent you from going and opening this back in 2012.
Right. And it's not making any changes to my MVC runtime binaries. I still have MVC3 as my project reference.
So
and then it's
looks like that second one there is the most important. MVC3 projects have a limited functionality. Your controller, add controller, add view. So all of those
tooling
gestures.
Yes.
Ah, let me see if I understand how this is happening. You remember how earlier we had Scott Hunter on, and he said that we removed the project GUID.
GUID, exactly.
Ah, and I bet you that means that the menus depended on that GUID.
Yes. And later on, I'm going to show you like how you can remove the project GUID as well and start making use of the new tooling that we have.
Okay, cool. We'll see that a little bit later.
So in this project, let me close this browser window. I can still go ahead and sort of open my views up. So I can open my home index view.
So this one still has the project GUID because it is still an MVC3 project.
Exactly.
It has not yet been upgraded, but it's been opened in 2013, and I can still develop.
Yes, and my whole goal is I do not want to upgrade this project. I just want to make sure I want to party on this project, and I have multiple people working on it, which might have different versions of VS. So I'm just enabling that scenario.
Right. So this means that maybe the entire team hasn't upgraded to 2013,
right.
But one of the main architects has, and he wants to be able to open the project without messing it up for everybody else.
Exactly.
Excellent.
So I can change this text to like MVC3.
Now, here I've got some like squigglies. Is that bad?
No, that's not bad. It's just the Razor engine sort of kicking in. I also have minimum syntax highlighting support. So I can do like sort of add system.
I see. So it knows that you've got Razor there and you've got your IntelliSense.
Yeah.
And all of because it's a C# project, of course, you've got IntelliSense. And everything works fine in controllers.
Yes.
You can build and debug and run.
You can do everything that you want to. The only thing you can't do right now is like you cannot add new controllers via the tooling gestures because
I see.
The GUID that we have is still for MVC3.
So, but I could certainly add a controller by just copying an existing controller.
Yes, or you can create a .dot like a C# class file.
Oh,
just
create
a new controller from there. So you know I can run this app.
And this is running it from 2013, but it still runs as an MVC3 app.
Exactly.
So it's not part of OneASP.NET, but it hasn't been messed with.
It hasn't been messed with, so that you can sort of easily do this round-tripping scenario of opening it up in 2013 and going back in 2012.
Excellent. So, you know, that's great.
I get some system my output for datetime, and this is my MVC3 app.
All right. Rock on. Cool. Now, if I wanted to upgrade, it would be a more complicated thing.
Right. So let's see how an upgrade scenario would look like for an application. So I'm going to open a project which I have created using 2012. So I'm going to go to this my demos folders. And so this is an application which is using MVC4, Web API 1, SignalR 1, and this was created in Visual Studio 2012. So, you know, this probably brings in most of our stack together in an application, and this demonstrates what a typical app might look like.
So this is kind of before the OneASP.NET.
This is kind of before the OneASP.NET started.
But you listed out SignalR 1, we're on 2 now.
We're on 2. We're on
Web API, MVC. It's pretty much the whole web stack except web forms.
Exactly. So I'm going to run this app just to show you what this app does.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I'm going to open up in Chrome as well because I'm using SignalR. So I want to show you some
sort of
basic chat demos as well.
Is it compiling or what's, there you go.
Yep.
So maybe snap them next to each other. So, okay, so we've got Chrome on the left and we've got IE on the right. Okay,
And you also see a gradual transition in the markup and the layout of the pages from MVC 3 to 4.
Yeah, that's interesting. We are kind of seeing a little bit of history there
yeah.
as we move to Bootstrap.
And I have a chat controller, which is based on SignalR. So it's saying, what's my name? On my left side is Scott, so I'm going to say Scott here. Mm-hmm. And on my right side, it's using IE. I'm going to say Pranav. I'm going to say, hi, Scott. Hope you are well.
Probably more information than we needed. Oh, OK, cool.
And so then
you get the SignalR experience.
Exactly.
This is SignalR 1, early
this
days.
This is SignalR 1.
OK.
And so I'm going to close all these browsers again back. And I'm going to close this solution. And I'm going to open this solution in 2013.
Okay.
So I'm going to say file, open project. Okay. So this is the first time I'm opening the solution in VS 2013.
And nothing bad happened.
Nothing bad happened.
That's to be expected, I assume.
Yes.
Because we're not, just by opening it doesn't imply an upgrade scenario.
Exactly. And so in this case, like if I look at my packages config right now, it has a lot more packages than MVC 3. So I have MVC 4 runtime, I have SignalR runtime over here, I have Web API runtime, and I have web pages. So I have a lot of NuGet packages in my application.
Right.
And it's a good rule of thumb while updating packages via NuGet is I tend to prefer using PowerShell mm-hmm. better. And the reason
is more control.
Exactly. And so because a lot of these packages have dependency, like MVC depends on web pages and Razor packages, SignalR depends on jQuery packages, so you don't want to go and update all the packages itself.
But why is it that we feel, and I know I've been guilty of doing this myself, we feel that we can or should be able to just type upgrade all, and it should just figure it out.
Because what happens is like it's saying that I had .NET Framework 4.0 installed and it's update like to 5.0 and everything should just work.
So you're saying it's just because update all says get the latest of everything regardless.
Exactly. Regardless.
Okay, and that's not always the smartest thing.
And it's not always the smartest thing.
Okay. So what's a good strategy? If I do update all, presumably it'll kind of work and good things will happen and bad things will happen.
On a good day.
Yeah.
The recommended strategy is like you choose what packages you want to upgrade.
Okay.
So we'll start by sort of upgrading MVC and then we'll build it and make sure our solution runs. Then maybe, I might have learned about this cool feature in SignalR 2 that I wanted to use in my application. So I'll go back to my app and I'll upgrade the SignalR packages and all the dependent packages that SignalR needs to run, and then I'll update that.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go and update all your packages in one go and sort of be stuck like, what happened? Did this package break my app or this other dependent package broke my app?
Right. You're going to chase your tail.
Exactly.
You've changed multiple variables and you're never going to really know what happened.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm going to start by upgrading MVC.
And you like doing this. You can do this from the GUI.
You can do it from the GUI, but I prefer the PowerShell a little bit more, especially for update scenarios, because then I can actually see in the output console like what happened to the packages.
Mm-hmm.
And if any failure happened, then I can clearly see the logs to figure out what's happening. So
right.
It gives you more information.
And certainly, of course, it's important. I mean, it's obvious to remember, but important to remember that only one person has to do this. They're going to get the project running and working. They'll check it back in.
Yes.
Just checking in the source code changes, if any, and the packages.config.
Right. And a pro tip is you should always use package restore as a way of building in a CI solution or a team environment, because packages should always be restored from a common source.
Right. Even if the package restore isn't NuGet itself, it can be somewhere internally.
Local on your file server or anywhere that
All
you
right.
want it to be. And so what this is going to do is basically it's going to walk that dependency chain for MVC and all the dependent packages, and it's going to go to NuGet.org and sort of download all the packages.
Now, could I ask for a specific version? I could say update package.
That's a great point, yes.
--version, if I knew that the boss wanted me to use this version or that version.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So there's a /version flag that you can pass in mm-hmm. to this.
So here we're doing a upgrade to latest.
Yes.
As opposed to saying I wanted a specific version.
Yep.
All right. And another little pro tip for you, what I like to do, and this is just me, if it's a multi-step upgrade, I cheat and I take my packages.config and I name them. I make a copy.
Oh,
Packages.config.step1.
.step1. That's a
good
thing.
And then I'll select them both and then diff.
And then diff.
Because a lot of stuff just happened here.
Because, I mean, the scroll bar sort of went very tiny and
okay, so what's going on here?
So that's a very interesting thing what happened. So it's saying Visual Studio has detected an upgrade of your project, and because you've upgraded from MVC 4 to MVC 5.
Mm.
And what has happened in the background is, remember, like, we were talking about the GUID that existed from MVC 3 and MVC 4, and now with the one ASP.NET theme, it's sort of been taken away.
Right.
Like, this installation of MVC 5 packages sort of removes that MVC 4 GUID from your application.
Ah, so the project system within Visual Studio is like, you just changed this out from under me.
I need to reload to sort of gracefully take you in. and then if I look at my packages config file, then you would see that MVC is now like 5.1, so I grabbed the latest instead of grabbing the particular 5.0 version, and then Razor is 3.1 itself.
Okay. So then you go and you unload the project and reload it?
And I'm just going to basically do that. So I'm going to unload the project. I'm just going to say yes, because there were some changes that happened to the solution file. And I'm going to reload the project. And that's pretty much it. A few things that I have to do is I do have to update some of the dependent packages. So for example, I do have to update web data.
So what is web data, and how would I know to do that by myself?
Oh, actually, if you run this application, then we might run into some errors. Let's try that.
Maybe if they're educational errors, it'll be good.
So let me run the application. So at least the build was fine.
So we did a straight upgrade of just the MVC package and its dependencies.
Correct.
And we have it in a state that is unclear at this point.
Yes.
But it is a MVC 5 app now.
Correct.
Albeit a broken one.
It is. Although a broken one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I ran this app and I got some exception messages saying that some code from WebMetrics web data is trying to access security critical methods in system web pages.
This is scary to me.
This is very scary. So what I would have done basically is, like, you know, as a good rule of thumb is, before you upgrade a major version, you should always go to the ASP.NET site and then learn about what's new in MVC. So for example, in MVC, we have what's new in MVC 5.
Ah, so you go back there. That was good information. You just went to ASP.NET/product name.
Product
MVC, name.
Web API, SignalR.
And then on the left-hand side here, releases, what's new in 5.1.
Right.
We have very, very detailed release notes.
Exactly. And then it tells you what the release is all about, like what are the new features.
Oh, and look at that.
And then it has a tutorial, like how do you upgrade. But I think the more critical part is it has something called as known issues and breaking changes.
Okay.
And so...
So everything, just to be clear, on that page there that said how to upgrade.
Yeah.
Right here. That is basically all the things that we're doing.
Right. Explicit
detail.
As a tutorial, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
And this known issues and breaking changes is something where we try to document, like, what were some of the breaking changes that happened in MVC 5. And this would help you fix your application. So for example, if we made some API breaking changes, or in this case, the reason it's failing is because of this.
Removal of security transparent, okay, cool.
So this means that any framework that was built with MVC 2 or MVC 4 and web pages 2 needs to be recompiled against MVC 5 or Razor 3.
I see, so it's saying Razor 2,
right,
where our MVC 4 application was originally.
Exactly.
Written, is incompatible with it. So we need to be using Razor 3.
So we need to be using Razor 3 and update all the packages that depend on Razor 3 that have been recompiled for Razor 3.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that's why in our application, when we got this error, that's what it's trying to say.
Ah, security transparent method, that was the thing that was removed.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I know this webmatrix.webdata, like in my packages.config file, I'd remembered I had a package called webpages.webdata.
And this is important because webpages is Razor.
Webpages is Razor.
And we're using two.
Two. And we should be using three for that particular.
We want all of this to be. So we have a webpages three.
Right.
And then some twos underneath it there.
Exactly. So I'm just going to go and update package.
Ah, there you go. And then there's from 2 to 1. Okay. And then packages config changes. Now, notice that Pranav is keeping the packages config open. I like to do that. It's just a bit of a geeky thing. It's like leaving the task manager open all the time.
Yeah.
But it lets you know if anyone's in there messing around.
Because even though it's a little annoying, the dialog pops up, but it does tell you like what happened.
Right, right. Now, that one got updated to 3.1. Do these other two need to be updated as well?
Let's see. And so the whole process is it's a trial and error.
Do I need all of those things? Should I think about trimming at the same time?
So webmetrics.data. So the reason, what happened was since we updated webpages.webdata, it depends on webpages.data. And
okay, so I was probably right.
You were probably right on that. So as soon as your app starts to use any of these features/packages, you will start getting these errors at runtime. And I think a good point to note over here is like all of these errors are runtime failures. You don't get any compilation errors. Because the changes that happened in the framework was like if any assembly is compiled against a 2.0 version, when it tries to load at runtime, it's going to give you an exception. So good documentation, like the release notes, helps you in that direction.
Right,
like,
and then the detailed migration
documentation
as well. Okay, so we'll load it again.
So I just did a refresh. It's spinning for a longer time, which is always a good sign.
You think that's a good sign?
That's a good sign.
Yeah, you feel good about that?
That means we're making progress.
Okay.
Voila.
Now, does this mean we're done?
Nope.
Okay.
Because remember, our goal was that we had MVC 4 and SignalR 1, and mm-hmm. so we've gone to MVC 5, but now I want to go to SignalR 2 as well.
Ah.
So let's go back to our Package Manager console, and I'm going to update Microsoft ASP.NET.
Presumably, of course, we have, at this point, we would have tests, and we could go through, and our app doesn't do anything.
Right.
But we would, other than chat, you would have your
some
coded UI test or Selenium test or
unit
JS unit or whatever,
right.
And you'd go and make sure things are cool.
Exactly. So I'm going to update the SignalR packages, so it's telling me that it's upgrading from 1.0 to 2.02.
Now, in some instances, when you go to a major version, you're going to see changes in the APIs.
Correct.
You are going to see build fails.
Correct.
Which is a little bit different
than
what we saw before.
Exactly. In a way, you can say those are more helpful or not so helpful, like, oh, my build break. Well, fix it. It's an easy one to fix.
Right, right. This is interesting. So this particular upgrade scenario actually popped up a text file.
Correct.
With important information.
Yes. So what it's trying to say is, like, you're upgrading from 1x to 2.0, and looks like there have been some changes, and it's giving me a forward link, which I can sort of copy and paste in my browser.
Oh, and there you go.
And then there you go.
Our docs team once again.
Right. It's right there.
Being awesome.
Helping people out. But if I go back, so the beauty of this approach is, it looks like there have been some changes on how you register SignalR in your application. And it's actually giving me a piece of stub of code, which I can copy and paste in my application.
Okay. So do you have a startup class?
I don't. So let me create a...
You could just take that whole thing, couldn't you?
I could. So in my application, I can add a new class.
I'd probably put it in app start. That's me. Okay, startup. And this is because SignalR2 is beginning to use Owen.
Correct.
And we're going to learn more about this later in the day as we kind of provide people with enough context about not just what we're doing in ASP.NET today, but what we're doing in the future.
Yes.
SignalR and Web API and being built on these new technologies are allowing us, not only as we talked about with Scott Hunter, to separate ASP.NET from Visual Studio, but from IIS as
from
well.
From IIS itself, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can take SignalR and self-host it, take Web API, you can self-host it. So it really makes it... So I built my application.
Okay. Now, there was a thing there that said the routing was not appropriate as well.
Oh, sorry.
So go back to our README. There was your Hubs connection, right? Go ahead and go back up. Okay, so we had the startup.
Right.
And now our yellow screen of death there is telling us that, not yellow screen of death, Map Hubs is obsolete. So the way in your global ASA that you're doing that, and they want you to do it in the App Builder.
So now since I was using SignalR 1, I was sort of using the old APIs to register SignalR,
right,
basically setting up the routing for SignalR. And so it's going to build in this case.
It's a fairly helpful message, too, and that one also included a forward link.
Exactly. So I'm going to go back to my application, and I'm going to go to the chat.
You confident? 60%?
60%.
You're living dangerously. You know, and there's always something you're going to bump into. It's the kinds of things that you'll bump into, though, are going to be JavaScript files not matching up.
Exactly.
It'll be assembly versions that you didn't think about.
Yes.
One of the things, and this is just me. Now, I like to use the Glimpse tool. It's an open source tool.
Yes.
And one of the things that's great about Glimpse is that it lets you see what versions of DLLs get loaded in memory. You can also do that with the modules view in the debug menu on Visual Studio.
Visual Studio, okay.
And the point I'm making is that sometimes the DLLs on the disk have a version,
right,
and somehow the ones in memory get a different version because something got pulled out of the GAC,
yes,
or there's an old file sitting in the bin folder.
Or maybe you had some, your server side, you had some, when you published last time, there was some.
And this is really important, is assert your assumptions, right? I mean, you need to know what's going on in your package's config.
Yes.
You need to know what your goal is. What version do I want in memory?
Right.
Where did it come from? Did it come from NuGet? Did it come from my bin folder?
Yes.
I've had situations where I'll fight for an hour and I'll realize that I had some old thing in the bin. Yeah.
And then you had the assembly section in webconfig that used to pull in more stuff than. So,
and it seems a little frustrating initially, but there's only so many places that you can look. ASP.NET is less and less a black box.
Yes.
Web config, packages config, your bin folder.
The bin folder, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's what helps us, like, as we're going more and more to NuGet packages, like, it's sort of self-contained in your application.
Right.
And that's where you need to look.
Did it work? All right, cool.
Perfect.
Do we know that we're using SignalR, too? Can you, like, right-click and look at our source code?
Right-click and look at a source code.
Like right-click view source?
No.
Here. Yeah, right-click in here, view source. And so where's SignalR? Look down. Here we go.
Oh, no.
So that's using SignalR1's jQuery. But click on this one here. Go back to there and click on the hubs. See where it says SignalR/hubs? That's where you said map hubs.
Right.
So here we're bringing in the JavaScript 2, but this is a really subtle...
This is a really subtle...
Subtle thing.
Yes.
What you're saying here is that we've got SignalR 2 working, everything's fine, we hit SignalR/hubs, we can see we're in fact getting the embedded SignalR 2 stuff.
Exactly.
But NuGet can't update your JavaScript references.
Exactly. So what I have to do is I have to go back in my application, and in my chat view, I have to go and update my SignalR reference.
So under scripts,
I have.
Yeah. So what that probably means is that you're not even really using this because that doesn't even exist on disk.
It was cached.
Oh.
So let's do this. So let's. So
I want to see it fail first.
Yeah. So let's just go back.
Yeah.
Like do Control F5.
And then let's do an F12 tools too. Control F5, of course, is the cache breaking refresh.
So I think in this case, now if we sort of trace the network traffic, we should probably see a 404 for the signal arm.
There you go. It just went by. Go up. There it is. Yeah. So there, that's failing. And you got to look for those kind of things.
You got to look for the, exactly. And so I'm going to change this to 2.0.2.
Yeah. Now, if you had done bundles or had used the minification libraries, you might not have had that problem.
Exactly. And then if I control F5 again.
So yeah, there we go.
It works. So there, I have SignalR2 as well working in my application as well.
So is this upgraded now?
This is pretty much upgraded. Like, I can sort of add new functionality by saying, like, I can add a controller. So I can go add new item. And then if I go to MVC, you would see now that it's giving me a filtered list of controllers that I can add. So since now my app is MVC 5, it's not showing me the MVC 4 options at all. And so I can add MVC 5 controllers. I can add Razor 3 views. For SignalR, I can add SignalR 2 hubs. I'm not seeing any of the SignalR 1 hubs or the persistent connection options because I've upgraded to SignalR 2. So this app is now basically ready in a state where you can start using it in VS 2013 as well.
Very cool.
And you can still take this app and open up in VS 2012 as well because we shipped an update for our tooling for MVC 5 and Razor 3 for VS 2012 as well. So simply for the fact that, you know, the developers have different versions of Visual Studio, and they should be able to open the same project, be it MVC 5 or 4, on different versions of Visual Studio.
Okay, cool. Do we have any other projects that we can upgrade?
Yes. So this is...
Classic ASP?
Classic, close.
How far back can we go?
We've gone back to membership.
Okay.
Membership.
Yeah. Original
membership. So this one's a very interesting scenario. Is, you know, like as we build new stacks, we always get this common question is like, I mean, the new features are awesome. They're great, but how do I upgrade my apps to the new features? And if you look at the upgrade experience, it's fairly, I would say, a little more easier to upgrade code because you get compilation failures or you get runtime errors. But when it comes to data, it gets harder.
Like, well, and there's a lot more fear involved.
There's a lot of fear involved. Like, I have my bank site, which has all my users created. Like, okay, well, I mean, this new system is awesome, but, like, what do I do with my existing user information? That's, you know, where the critical part of app migration sort of comes.
Well, yeah, and I think people feel very strongly about that. When you have a membership system, when you've bought into how you're going to store your passwords and manage your users,
right,
that's a big deal.
Like, when you upgrade, like, you don't want users to reset their passwords because they've already created their passwords and they're happy with it. Mm-hmm. So why make it sort of worse for them?
And also the security at every point in what you do.
Exactly. So I'm going to close all my tabs that I've opened.
Okay.
And this is an application which is using ASP.NET Web Forms. It's using the membership system. And it's using the profile system as well that existed. So, you know, like profile used to get serialized in as binary data. And the whole point about this experience is like, you know, this is a very canonical example of the most apps people have as of today. Uh-huh. And as we look at how do they bring them forward to the new stack of EF6, identity, like the new auth system that we have, like how do we move forward?
And we should, as we're doing that, we should talk about, you know, what are the benefits? We don't want to just blindly upgrade unless there is a new thing. To your point about SignalR, when upgrading from 1 to 2, explore the features. There's no reason to upgrade unless you feel that there's a great feature that you want.
Exactly.
But at the same time, for some applications, you want to stay fresh. So what is this? This app is .NET 4.5 and web forms?
This is .NET 4.5 and web forms, and it's using the membership system.
The original membership system?
It's using universal providers, but it's the same story for SQL membership or universal providers.
Alrighty.
And what I'm doing is I'm just changing the connection strings so that we can start with a clean database. So I'm putting all to 7.
For this demo, normal people will not be able to start with a clean anything.
So in this app,
we haven't upgraded anything.
We haven't. We're going to create a few users in this application, and then we're going to upgrade.
Okay. So we're simulating that we've got this product, it's been working great
right.
for a while, and it's got a bunch of users.
Yes.
Like a billion.
Like one.
Well, let's make like two.
Okay.
To make the upgrade realistic. It's got to be a realistic upgrade.
It has profile data, I think, which makes it fairly realistic.
Right, and profile, so additional custom profile data.
Additional custom profile, like what's my hometown?
yeah, and that's data height? That's held in a different way in the database.
Exactly.
Than your name and your username, okay?
So I have tests. I set my super strong password.
Nicely done.
And I'm going to register, which is going to create a new account for me in this site.
Okay, so
I'm going to say add profile data.
Ah.
So here's like what's my date of birth.
Okay, so we have the authentication and authorization stuff, but the addition of the profile data is an important
yes.
note.
Yes, and the profile is going to get stored in the same way as in the profile system that we always had in ASP.NET.
Okay.
And then Seattle. And then I'm going to sort of go and add profile data. Okay. So I'm going to go back to my application, and I'm going to open up the database
okay.
to show you what happened. So the database is sitting locally to my application. And if you look at the schema, like the schema is what we would have in the traditional
right.
memberships world. Like here's the users table. It's going to open up and show me the basically the one user that I had. It was a
there you are.
Test. And here's how profile was stored as well as binary data.
Ooh, yeah.
So it was serialized. So this was the state of the world, like, you know, and
yeah,
I have
yeah.
millions of users over here.
So that's a property bag.
A property bag.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. So, okay. you know, like the benefit of the new world in terms of authentication and ASP.NET identity is like it's going to simplify how do you add profile data for users and how do you add local logins by username passwords or social logins by Facebook and stuff.
Right.
Because if you think about apps, it's like, you know, I want to store some sort of data with the particular user, like what's his mm-hmm. height, weight, and hometown. But it's serialized as some binary data.
Well, and you couldn't query on it.
You
How would you go and say, give me all the people in Portland?
Exactly. And
yeah.
you couldn't do model binding on it. So it's not very useful as it exists today.
Certainly not friendly. Okay, so the goal here is to upgrade this to the new membership system.
Exactly.
Called Identity.
Called Identity.
Okay.
And then we're going to migrate the authentication bits to from like FormsAuth, which was doing the cookie-based login, to OwenAuth, to OwenCookies, and doing Facebook and Google logins and stuff.
Okay, cool.
So the strategy that we're going to have is in this application, I'm going to change the schema of this database as well. Because the reason I want to change the schema is so that it closely matches the schema of the identity system. So when you start taking in new features from identity V1 to V2, your upgrades are going to be pretty seamless
okay.
because you've already matched a base schema. And to do that, what I have is I have a SQL script which I've generated.
And how did you do this? How would the user do this?
So the way I generated the SQL script was I created an app with the ASP.NET Identity V1. I opened the database in Server Explorer.
Yeah.
And I basically said, like, you know, script to SQL. And it generated me the script itself.
So you took the original version of ASP.NET Identity and said, script this out so I have all of the table structure.
Exactly.
Expressed as SQL.
Yes. So I'm just going to run this SQL script, and it's just going to create the tables for me. So, for example,
the new tables.
The new tables, like.
And you're going to take them along, you're putting them, what is all these drops here? Oh, those are if they were already there.
If they were already there, correct.
So you're adding the new identity tables alongside
right.
the old ones. So
right.
you have a database in transition.
Exactly. Because I don't want to directly change the data in the old tables itself.
Yeah, not yet.
So I'm going to do a refresh. And what you would see is like all the new tables would show up. I mean, the
right,
tables
right.
would be empty, like they don't have any data.
And this script here, again, as a reminder, like it's quite simple the way you did that. You had basically an empty, new, fresh
yes.
ASP.NET app.
Absolutely.
And took its skeleton.
Right, without any data inside this particular.
Okay.
So it's still refreshing.
There, yeah. Okay, here we go. So those are the ones that start with ASP.NET are the new ones.
Are the new ones, exactly.
All right.
And if I just.
You see that there's no users there, I assume.
I hope so.
How is there anyone in there? Did your script move them?
Oh, yes, sorry. The script moves the user data. It doesn't move the profile data.
How did it know to do that? Let's go back.
Let's see.
It's kind of an important thing we missed there. Are you sure that's how you got the script?
So it creates insert into...
Where'd you get all that?
So this is all the scripts that you get when...
Yeah, but the insert into, though, couldn't have been generated, right? How did it know? How do you have a migration script here, not a creation script?
Yes.
So how did where did this come from?
So this, let's look at the table again. Basically, what it's trying to do is it's trying to match the schema that you had of your older membership system. So that's why it has all these fields called application
legacy
ID.
And this and that.
Right.
And there's, I remember you had put in t at t.com.
Right.
The question that I'm not understanding, though, is that if this SQL file were one that simply made some tables, I understand where you got that from. You got it from exporting the skeleton of an empty database.
Yes.
But when you ran that, I expected a bunch of empty tables to show up.
Yes.
And miraculously, test
showed up over here.
Showed up over here, which is concerning because I know for a fact that if I go and script out.
No,
So where'd that come from?
So there is.
Because our customer needs to know how to do that. Do you know where it came from?
No.
So that's a problem.
Yes. Or
do you know who gave you this script?
Yes, a developer wrote this script for me.
Is this something people can get? Because they can have it now.
Actually, they can. So we have this tutorial, which is online.
Oh, so that's probably where it came from.
Yeah. I hope.
Oh, there you go. Again, the documentations team.
So what I'm showing you over here is an entire tutorial, which is a walkthrough of what we're going through, basically.
Let's see if we can find that script. I just want to feel like people are going to be able to get that.
Ah.
Okay. This is going from even older.
Yeah, this is going from SQL membership.
Yeah.
So let's, there should be a link.
Okay. Well, let us, let's keep going.
Yeah.
But what we'll do is we will make a, we'll put in a gist and we'll make sure that either that documentation is updated or something, because I need to make sure that the script
does the right thing.
Is available to everyone.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I want to make sure we can, if you wouldn't mind just clicking in there, and can you just control scroll just a little bit, if you don't mind, just to kind of make this font smaller. Hit control, there you go. So control, create table, that's cool, scroll down. Insert into that magic right there, that requires a non-trivial amount of work.
Right.
There's the users table. Keep going.
That's the roles table.
Roles, claims. Everything else is pretty straightforward create, but it's that chunk there.
Yes.
Let's go back to that. So that is the user to user migration.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's matching the exact schema that you had in the membership.
So, let us confirm and find out where that is, and then either you or me will make sure that the docs
absolutely
have that. I know that the docs have them. I just don't want to go around Googling with Bing to find them right now.
Yes.
Okay.
So what we want to do next is basically we're going to migrate the profile data for the user as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in my solution.
Just make sure it's empty, though. Right? Where does the profile, in the new world, where does it go?
In the new world, the profile data should show up over here. So right now you see that it has fields for what's my date of birth, city.
Just generic profile stuff?
Yeah, because that's what I had in my user, right? I filled in my date of birth, my city, my height and weight.
Oh.
But the data is not there.
Oh, okay.
Because the data is still stored in that binary format in the old profiles table.
All right.
So what I'm going to do is basically I have this console exe project. I'm going to compile it. And in my web application project, I am going to bring in this folder called identity models. And let me explain you what's happening in this identity models folder. So the whole goal behind creating this identity models is I need to create some EF mapping, which is going to map my database to an EF model. So I can start using, I can do query using the DB context. I can find the list of users. I can find what the profile data is for the user. So it's going to give me a nice code-based way of accessing my data.
And you got that folder where?
In my root of my application.
No, but this is an old application. You would have gotten that from a new one.
No, I had to create all these classes myself. So I've gone ahead in time, and I've created
but
these.
Does that mean that the user, like,
has
Joe,
to.
Joe customer has to?
Yes. So Joe customer.
That doesn't seem nice.
It doesn't, but remember, you are migrating your data forward. And so we are helping you.
Are these the identity models that represent these here?
Yes.
So or are example, these the identity models that represent your old ones?
They are going to represent the old ones, which are going to be used in the new system.
Okay, so let's make sure I understand. So what you're saying is that these identity models are entity framework code-first projections.
Yes.
Of the couple of tables from your original
membership.
Stuff.
Yes.
But original membership is a known thing. Most people have the same structure.
Yes, for the most
part.
So
that's another folder you should make available to the public.
It is. Like, so this, if you follow the documentation... Like,
it's in the docs.
It's in the docs.
See? Just checking. Just, I want to make sure everybody has...
The docs everything. Do a much better job of explaining all the flow and then giving you the code.
No pressure. You have 5 minutes.
The key is there's the profile info which we have created. And this is a helper that lives in the application which is going to serialize the profile from that binary data into strongly typed objects which you can use in your application.
So you have this thing called complex type here.
Yeah.
Hover over that. Where is that namespace? System component models. Okay.
So
those are your specific applications. This is a C# class representing the binary data that we're going to suck out
from the old system
and put into the new.
Exactly.
It's going to come out of binary blob and into
strings.
Strings in columns.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
So let's run this exe.
Now what's exe?
So this migrate profile data is the exe, which is going to do the migration of the profile information.
You got to show me that. Did we see that already?
We actually didn't see that.
Yeah. See, I'm here to keep you honest. And then a miracle happens.
And then...
I think you're being a little...
Leap of faith.
Vague here in step two.
So remember, like, I had created this identity models folder where I was mapping all the EF projections and creating a DB context.
The before state.
Yep. This console exe basically it uses the application DB context and then loads the profile.
Right.
And I had my profile helper, which was serializing from binary data to strongly typed objects. And it's going to store that information into each column in my new table.
I see. So you use the XML serializer.
Right.
And there's your complex type.
Right.
So you pull out the blob. You've got that held now in the string reader there. And it's sitting now in profile data.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I just store it in my user.profile.
Because the user.profile is the
profile info, which has...
Which is now an entity framework code first object.
Yes.
And it will be saved automatically into columns.
Yes.
Do you need to check your connection string?
I did change that. So we should be... Good?
60%?
This should be 90.
No?
Maybe.
You think you can stick the landing?
Hey!
He's like, I'm surprised it worked.
And if I...
The thing is, when you're doing this kind of work, and when you're doing the kind of thing, and I'm teasing you, of course, whether it's going to work or not, is you got to keep reminding yourself that it's not a black box. It's not a black box.
Yes.
In everything that you do. Like, even the... I mean, of course, maybe it wasn't the greatest idea to put profile data in binary blobs.
Right.
But we weren't there.
Yep,
we were in diapers.
Exactly, I'm just.
No, we can't take credit. but the point is that it's still there. So the idea here is that in the first phase of this was a straight SQL conversion from one schema to another,
right?
Using just SQL with a mysterious file that we'll find out where it came from.
Yes.
And then the second phase was to populate those extra profile
information,
unfolding the binary data and then laying it out.
Exactly.
Column by column.
Yes.
Cool.
So let me go back to my application. I'm going to do a few more things which are sort of going to help. is I'm going to include this folder called identity account, because when I register and create a new user, I'm going to start using the new identity system.
And where did identity account come from?
It's if you follow our docs, there's a sample tutorial on how do you add these files.
So these are the ones when you make a regular ASP.NET app. You can get these by making a fresh one and bringing them over.
Exactly. So this is what you get when you create a new web forms app using the one ASP.NET file new project creation.
Makes sense. Okay.
And this uses a new identity system and stuff.
Now, I do this a lot, actually. When I'm trying to bring something forward, I'll go and I'll make a new one, and I'll look at the web config, and I'll compare folders. I'll use tools like Beyond Compare to do diffs.
Exactly.
To make sure that, oh, I see I need this folder because that's the new identity system.
So the sample that we have, basically, we've gone through that exercise, and we have put the diff for you as a sample that you can download and sort of use it in your application. So I'm going to quickly change...
Very quickly. We're coming at the end of the session here.
Okay.
But we'll be back with more Pranav.
We will be back with more me.
With more you.
You know, so I can change these URLs to basically point to the new folders that I created.
I see. So and you can switch. So account is your old pages.
Exactly.
And identity account is your new one. And of course, you could just copy them over the old ones. And there's different
ways. Different ways you could have done that, basically. And then I'm going to switch the auth system from being forms auth to being cookie auth. And so in this case, I'm creating a file called startup, which is the open startup configuration.
Same kind of thing we did before.
Same kind of thing that we did before. I'm going to uncomment these lines.
And this, again, was brought directly over from a newer ASP.NET application.
Yeah. And then if I just run my application, you know, so this application is now being upgraded to ASP.NET Identity. It's using... Open cookie auth as well. And once the app comes up, I can still log in with the user that I created previously, but I can start using some of the new features. I have better control over profile. I have sort of social logins over here as well.
Yep.
So let me just, if I go to the login screen.
The profile stuff is a reason enough.
Yes.
Now you can also have your users log in. Look at that. So we'll just leave it right there. Yep. You can now log in with Google or Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
And that's the benefit of the new system as well.
Very cool. Thank you so much. We're going to come back in just a few minutes. And we're going to come back in just a few minutes with more exciting stuff here on Azure Week. We'll see you soon.